page, slide 27, a little bit of structural ontology.
Hey, Adam, could you do me a favor and just repeat the text of the last bullet, please?
The text of the last bullet, there exists, ?X. That means there exists something about which the following is true. So exists is a relation between a variable and a sentence.
Mike, again, do they do universal quantification?
Yes. I didn't put that down there because at TIFF, any variable that's not explicitly quantified in a statement, it can be assumed to be universally quantified.
Okay.
That simplifies the language somewhat.
Okay, great.
Okay. On to slide 27. So now I'm putting some of these things to use in TIFF syntax. So we can have the statement in TIFF, parentheses, instance George Bush human, in parentheses, and that means George Bush is an instance of the class of all humans. There exists X such that the parent of George Bush is X, so there exists something, or sorry, the other way around, the parent of X is George Bush, there exists something of which George Bush is the parent. Parent is an instance of relation, binary, or parent is an instance of the class, binary predicate. This is very important because any term is an instance of something in a knowledge base. Either it's an instance of a class or a relation or an instance of the class class.
That's interesting. Could you also specify parent as a class in its own right?
Yes, you could do that. So there's always a choice about whether to actually reify something, to actually give something a name as a class, or whether to specify it in sort of compositional form as a relation to something else. One of the thought experiments that one can do is something sort of fundamentally apparent? Is it apparent throughout its lifetime? And the answer to that is no. Parenthood is a role that one plays. So that's not a hard and fast test. So this is one of the things that Welty and Guarino have written about extensively. It's something they certainly feel very strongly about. My sense is that one has to be a little wary of creating kind of hard and fast rules about this sort of thing. But at the same time, one has to consider these issues because actually reifying a class parent, I think, probably not be a good idea.
Question for you.
Yes.
This is Bo Newman. You were talking here about the fact that things can be represented by their relational state or as individuals. There's a class of thought that says that all knowledge is in fact nexus of relationships. How does that play against this approach to ontology development?
Okay, so that to me sounds like a sort of philosophical position, which certainly could be taken, but if went with that kind of position, then you would have an ontology with no classes. You would just have individuals and relations. And you can do that, but it certainly winds up looking fairly awkward and fairly hard to do computation over.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, and the last two items on this slide, just defining the argument types of the relation parent, much in the same way as in any conventional procedural programming language, one would define the argument restrictions on a method or function call. Okay, so now why don't we go back to the exercise, and go to slide 28, and look at linking the terms that we've come up with to sumo terms. So some sumo terms I've listed in the first bullet, nation, confining, committing, etc. And I've also listed the terms that I came up with from the exercise that were just come up, I created just a priori without thinking about what the terms would be in sumo. And now the task is to try to relate these terms together. You don't have to use the terms in blue that I came up with. Please use your own from the first exercise. Try to link them in and define them. So one example is, you probably can't came up with the term Turkey, and Turkey isn't actually in Sumo, and so we'd create the definition that Turkey is an instance of the class nation, where nation is a Sumo term, an instance is a Sumo term, and Turkey is the term that you're adding to the ontology. So why don't I give everybody a few minutes to do that, and then we can start discussing what people came up with.
Specifically, does it mean citizenship or residence or so forth?
Okay.
One question for you, though, is how have you defined the term hijackers? What is that?
Good question. I didn't do that yet.
Okay. Because one thing to be careful of is you wouldn't want to say that the class of all hijackers is Turkish.
Correct. Yeah, I don't see your sumo stuff for people in terms of defining hijackers.
This is Bo Newman with a question again.
Yes.
In here, do you allow for the membership, for an instance, to be a member of more than one class?
Yes.
Okay.
That's somewhat common for instances to be members of several classes. It's a bit rarer for a class to be a subclass of several classes. Sort of consider multiple inheritance to be a powerful and occasionally dangerous tool that needs to be used wisely.
Okay. But at the instance level, it's a very common and far less dangerous.
Yes.
Well, taking that example, I mean, how did they do so? Do they have a keyword subclass or subclass of?
Yes.
Okay, so going back to hijacker, my initial thought would be to say hijacker subclass of human, or there may be more subclasses in between there, sort of like what WordNet would do.
Okay. So then that would be one reasonable initial cut at that. Now, the question I would then ask is, is any person fundamentally a hijacker? Is their fundamental identity throughout their lifetime that of a hijacker, or is that merely a role that they happen to be playing at some point in their lives? Okay, so I think
that's a good point.
I think it's probably a role, and therefore it would not make sense ultimately to define the class of all hijackers, but rather say that there is a role relationship between the social role of hijacker and the particular instance of person.
That's interesting. That's a good point. And obviously you have the danger of making too many subclasses, which expands the ontology tremendously and the depth of it.
Right.
Interesting.
I've heard this term, ontological promiscuity. Okay, anyone else have any ideas they want to share?
This is Jonathan Chire. I actually had a question, Adam.
Okay.
It seems it's easier to do in a small, well-defined context and becomes increasingly difficult as the context increases. Because it seems like more and more things are only true within a specific context. You were mentioning earlier about the notion of a hijacker being a role, but even something like a human might be time-based, or a parent might be time-based. So George Bush might have only been a parent for the last 20 years, but he wasn't before. And then there are kind of fringe cases where if both of his children died, is he still officially a parent or not? Same with human. After someone has died and disappeared, are they really still human or not? So I'm wondering that it seems like the upper ontologies, which are trying to be kind of base sets of starting points for given ontology, which sounds like a particular context, how do the upper ontologies deal with the fact that they're trying to support many and possibly large contexts, which would seem to have differences of opinions?
Before you answer, this is Bo Newman. Before you answer that question, I'd like to expand a little bit. I've been trying to deal with this whole issue of time variance in ontologies or ontological evolution, ontological continuums, and I've been using the term operative ontology to try to connect a specific ontology with an agent at a given time or a given event. And Can you address that as well in answering that question?
Okay. So I guess I could give first a very short and flip answer to the first question. You know, how do we ensure that an ontology is independent, an upper ontology is independent of different contexts? And the answer is very carefully. There are answers to these questions, but they are hard to come by, and that's one reason why it takes a lot of training to come up with, a lot of work to come up with an upper ontology. You need the right people and a lot of effort to do so. So in the particular cases that you mentioned, the issue about parenthood, I mean, the reason that, in fact, earlier I recommended that parenthood be a role rather than a class is, in fact, it does change throughout one's lifetime. You're not fundamentally once and forever a parent from since birth. You become a parent at some point in your life. And so that's why I would not make a parent a subclass of human, for example. In the case of one's identity as a human, I would also say that is a fundamental identity, and that a dead body is no longer a human, it's a dead body. And so that you actually can and should have an instance of human, and a class of human, and declare people as instances of it, and once they are dead, they are no longer instances of that class. So there are answers to these questions, they just require a lot of thought and consideration. That's sort of a broader thing. I mean, it's certainly true that especially as you get lower down the hierarchy from upper ontology down in domain-specific ontology, there are lots of different ways of carving up the world, and there certainly makes sense to have different domain-specific ontologies. However, from the work that we've done, we're fairly convinced that it's certainly possible to have an upper-level ontology that really does support everything, and we have a certain amount of evidence that supports that view. Ultimately, that'll be an empirical issue. Can people actually use our upper ontology in a lot of different situations? And is it suitable?
So here, this is John Harden from Envision. And Adam, I think you also will recognize me from posting about the Universal Data Element Framework.
Okay.
Which is something that we're working on in the Aerospace Industry Association and also in the Electronics Industry Association. The UDEP is pointed at semantic equivalency. So the thing that keeps occurring to me is that over and over and over, even though we develop XML-based languages that are message sets that have particular data elements, or we develop a taxonomy, or we develop an ontology, they're still individual to our particular usage and to possibly a group of partners that want to use an ontology because it provides a single vocabulary or a single dictionary with context. However, if you step outside that and you want to communicate to a group who has not established systems that link to the ontology, you still need some kind of a semantic label or a semantic identifier, even in the definitions that you've given to the elements in the ontology. Can you comment on whether or not you agree with that? Do you believe that I'm seeing things correctly?
Well, so I think that actually what you're pointing to is exactly the need for formal ontology, which is that in existing representations, there's always the problem of implicit assumptions. And
yeah.
Once people step outside their context, it's only then those assumptions become clear and nobody's bothered to write them down. And so there has to be a reconciliation process of explaining them.
Okay.
This is Bo Newman, and I had this question earlier. I was going to post it, but it's relevant now. Is there any work being done on an ontology for ontologies?
You know, the UDEF is about 15 years old now, and it's based on the International Standards Organization metadata standard of it's ISO 11179, and it takes 16 property words and 16 object words and purports. I haven't seen it proven true, untrue yet. Everything that I've tried to map into a data element concept has proven to be mapped with these 16 object and 16 property words. An object word would be document. A property word, for example, would be date. So you can string together a ID that represents document date. And the UDEF group is saying that you can add a semantic link represented by an intelligent ID that, for example, looks like D.T.2_A, which represents purchase order document date. And you can add that attribute in your XML data element for POID. Somebody else can add it in their XML element from a different format where the same data element concept called purchase order document date is instead named buyer order date. And then you can link by that attribute. So we're trying to be an overarching linking mechanism. And it sounds like the ontology, the ontolog group here is definitely an overlap with what we're trying to do, but I'm trying to figure out if they're complementary or not.
Well, certainly one of the uses for an ontology is as an interlingua between different legacy representations.
Right.
And the sort of naming scheme you talked about would certainly be possible within Sumo, for example. You can take every bifurcation of the taxonomy from the root as being an additional identifier that one would have to add. So between physical and abstract, so you put down a P, and then you put a dot, and then object and process. So O and or PR goes after that. So same sort of thing. That's very sensible. I mean, you could really take that to the absurdity of simplicity and just have entity and relation. I guarantee you, everything fits under entity and relation.
Yeah, definitely.
So it sounds like the standard you mentioned just sort of expands from there, and Sumo expands then considerably from that point. Instead of 16 or so terms, we have thousands.
Okay. Well, I tell you, we are interested in communicating with the ontolog group. We're busy pulling together support from some key groups and generating some public information that we think will be educational and also collaborative in nature, so that we can move the effort forward and fit it within the ontolog group and also other standards groups, if it makes sense. If there's not room for both, then I'm sure that we can make a decision on whether or not there are attributes from either that belong in the other, and pick the best approaches of both and come up with a really good approach.
That sounds great.
The thing I would say is, Mike, the concept, and I'm not familiar with UDEF, if there's a URL or something, I'd be interested in getting that.
Yeah, you bet. Adam and the rest, I'm the co-chair within a couple of different standards bodies for what's being termed the Metadata Harmonization Project. And aerospace has been driving it, but there's been a lot of activity being picked up by not only software vendors, but also by standards groups. I have fielded the possibility of communicating the breadth of our data and information and tutorials and everything else to the ontolog group, and I have been asked to wait a little bit until we have a more presentable face. So file this information away for a couple of weeks, and then I think that we'll probably be approaching you guys with what is probably some easily readable and digestible information instead of the massive file systems and everything else that we have now.
Right. Interesting. Because one of the things that I was saying, it sounds like, because I would believe that there's a fundamental difference between an ontology and sort of a universal naming scheme through a set of fixed definitions.
Yeah,
I agree with that too.
Semantic tag, I think, is probably what we're most close to naming it.
Right. Well, what I would almost like to see is whether there was an ontology governing those 16, I believe, I don't know what you call them.
Yeah, there's 16 object and 16 property words. I will send an email to the group and point you at some of the materials.
Okay.
Yeah, let's try to map those 16 objects and 12 properties to existing Sumo terms. And I think we may find that will both make maybe explicit things that might not be otherwise explicit in those terms, as well as, of course, there's always the possibility that we miss something in Sumo that we could add.
The thing that I think seems to be maybe the difference is that the 16 object and property words can be strung into any data element concept, theoretically, which would exist in the business world.
Yeah, I think that's a very important thing to point out. This is a business world context that we're talking about, and generally speaking about very structured data.
It also doesn't really deal with context. It just deals with the data element concept. And that's been a problem for the UDF, actually.
Yeah, I think the ontology world is looking at a far broader body of knowledge and a body of possibility for inference here.
Yeah, you guys are looking more towards the semantic, include personal and medical and everything else, right?
No, actually, I mean, we are specifically business, but then even at the UBL level, we probably will find labeling not expressive enough when one goes into context and business processes.
Well, one thing we should do is make distinct that there's SUMO, which is has been a long-term research project that my company's been involved in, and then there's the UBL effort where SUMO has been adopted as the upper ontology that would be extended in the UBL project. Where
right.
UBL is looking at some very specific information, but looking at reusing this very general structure.
Yeah, I think the thing that's become apparent to me is that the core components effort is kind of at the base of all of it.
Right.
The old, around 2001, information that was coming out of the EBXML group around the core components as it related to a global universal ID also referenced ISO 11179 16 object and property words. So I'm going to send those materials. And then I've got one other question, if somebody doesn't mind addressing that.
Go ahead.
One of our opponents is saying that they do not believe that our approach or any other approach is feasible unless it resides in an actual physical data model. I don't agree with that. How do you guys feel about putting this into a SQL-based data model?
Well, so as I mentioned early in the presentation, I think that's a perfectly fine way of, once the ontology is done and all the formal definitions are done, you really have straight with what all the terms mean, that actually implementing it as a relational database where you can write some Java code to use that information model or what, any other kind of procedural code, I think that makes perfect sense. I don't see that that's a requirement for the inherent success of the data modeling project.
Yeah, I guess the difference I'm drawing is that the UDF group is hoping to maintain a registry of data element concept semantic tags that could be used in any data model, but we're kind of resisting putting it in a formal data model that would limit the scope or the use of the structure.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that a relational data model would be a translation target that one should be able to compile out to automatically,
right?
But it shouldn't be the end-all and be-all because it's just not expressive enough.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, in essence, that should just, SQL or whatever, should just be one particular binding.
Yeah, there might be many, many different data models that could be driven from the same structural integrity that exists as a reference point.
Right, so on my main ontology homepage, we not only have the KIF version of SUMO, but we also have DAML, Loom, XML, and Protégé representations.
Okay.
Which are all less expressive than KIF, but we recognize that people are comfortable with lots of different languages. And so, in fact, one of the other translation targets should be an XML or an SQL, a set of database creation statements.
Yeah. This is Bo Newman again. As we're apparently getting close to the end here, I would like to kind of ask a question that maybe raises this up one level. You very clearly made a point in the beginning of your presentation that we've been discussing here strictly a subset of the overall ontological problem, and that being what we've called formal ontologies and specifically shared ontologies. When we were talking here now about once you have reached the point where you've got it fairly well described, and we're talking about bindings to other computer instances. How about the reverse, which is basically moving it back up into the actual, what you refer to as the capital P world, the metaphysical world, where we're saying that what we have learned here from a formal shared ontology description effort now expands our understanding of how ontologies at all levels work. Is there anything being done in that area?
Well, I think in fact everything that we do at the upper levels of SUMO potentially has the potential of impacting research and philosophy, because now we've got a computational test bed for testing philosophical ideas and a way to implement Leibniz's exhortation to folks that were arguing to just calculate, prove your argument in logic. So instead of just writing books with philosophy books with lots of text, we can really be doing applied analytical philosophy as a way to test philosophical ideas and see if they work.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so why don't I just wrap up the last couple slides so that we can end formally and then continue by choice, if you wish. So slide 29, here was just started a formalization so that there exists something that is a citizen of Turkey in this example. Slide 30, that there's an instance of a ferry boat. And then slide 31, kind of giving you the whole rest of a particular statement at once, that there's the agent of the hijacking event was this citizen of Turkey, that one patient or object in the event is the instance of ferry boat, and that the hijacking event is an instance of hijacking, and that the hijacking events took place earlier than 19th of January 1998. And there are all sorts of other things that one could formalize in here, but that's the reasonable collection of them. So hopefully this exercise has given you some hands-on experience and some general idea of what the formalization process actually looks like, as well as some of the surrounding ideas, philosophy, and approach, and methodology behind it. So that's it for the presentation. I really appreciate that everybody's participated so strongly and asked lots of good questions and come up with lots of good comments. So we can have more discussion or decide to close out when we wish.
On that note, let us all thank Adam for taking his time to prepare this and making the presentation to us and getting us down to the nuts and bolts of getting started with the UBL ontology project.
My pleasure. And I guess at some future point we'll actually start diving into Protégé. I feel like we've run over a little bit already, so I should probably save that for a later time. But I encourage people to play with Protégé and try to actually do some formalization, which is the object of this project. Maybe the presentation has given you some of the groundwork you need to get started on that. Please feel free to ask me as many questions as you need along the way in order to make this project a success.
Yeah. I would encourage, PDM here, I would encourage everyone to post the questions, because I truly believe most of the questions would be of interest to the rest of the community. But in particular, there are a couple of things I would like to discuss here. One is we had several people who said they would really have loved to come, but they couldn't because of conflicts, and asked if we are running this particular tutorial again, and if so, when. And then, of course, it would be appropriate also to discuss what is the next tutorial that we could run to get us sort of closer to really building out the UBL ontology.
This is Bo Newman. I've got to run. I'd like to thank Adam, and I'll look forward to adding my comments to those questions later, Peter.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Adam.